In 1960, when he was governor of Oregon, Mark Hatfield nominated Richard Nixon as the Republican presidential candidate to run against John F. Kennedy. Today, Mark Hatfield is a critic of administration policy in Vietnam and Cambodia, and we've asked him to talk with us about that.
We're talking with Republican Senator Mark Hatfield of Oregon. Senator Hatfield, President Nixon says that it's necessary to go into Cambodia and wipe out those sanctuaries and neutralize them for a period at least if we're going to continue our program of withdrawal of American troops successfully. I take it you're in disagreement with his argument.
I think all we have to do is look at history to find that every move that Mr. Johnson made to escalate the war was on the basis that it was going to shorten the war. And we learned tragically that this just did not happen that way, and I don't think it's going to happen now. This is an expansion of the war, and I think contrary to expectations, it's going to lengthen the war and reduce the time schedule of withdrawal of our American troops.
Now, you and several other senators have a resolution that would affect the conduct of the war. What would the resolution do?
In effect, it would create the responsibility where it belongs to either confirm this action on the part of the Congress or to veto it on the part of the Congress. This has never been a declared war, which the Constitution very clearly requires. And secondly, we have the purse string control over military expenditures. The Constitution is very specific. It says the Congress should not appropriate for a longer than 2-year period any military appropriations because they want them to review those appropriations and the purposes for which they are being used. So consequently, I think we should either say to the President and to the American people, we will assume our constitutional responsibilities to support the President's policy of expanding the war under a declaration of war, or we're going to restrict those expansion policies by a veto of the appropriations.
If it was not specifically authorized in terms of a declaration of war, is it not true that the war in Vietnam has been acquiesced in by the Congress all along the way?
This has been a very comfortable position in many ways because the Congress has not had to take a real position. They've never really had to confront the issue. Our resolution would create that confrontation, which I think is not fair to force upon the shoulders of one man, whatever his name or whatever his party, the responsibilities of sending American men into a deeper war and in for a prolonged war. The Congress should share in this responsibility, and our resolution would create that confrontation and create that responsibility.
It seems unlikely that the Congress at this point would want to declare war. Isn't it also unlikely that they would want to tie the President's hands insofar as military spending on the war is concerned?
Our resolution, first of all, permits the President to move in a logical and reasonable period of time to accommodate to the position the Congress will take on this if they veto the funds. I am hopeful that Congress will do this. If they should declare war, on the other hand, as the other alternative, then the President will move at his own pace again. We have a reasonable, responsible period of time for the President to adjust after the adoption of this resolution. We're not going to force our men into any kind of dangerous position. We're not going to cut off funds or support for them without giving due warning to the President to adjust to that purpose.
Senator Hatfield, you used to be a political science professor, and today you speak on a number of college campuses. What is your reaction to the death of 4 students at Kent State in Ohio?
Well, of course, it's a great tragedy, and everyone would agree to this. But I think we, again, have to provide constructive alternatives to take these debates and dissent from the streets, from rock throwing, from bomb throwing, into an area of constructive discussion and debate. And I think, again, the Congress can provide that. And this amendment of ours is a vehicle by which we can mobilize public opinion. I think the saboteurs of peace are those who would use violence at home while protesting violence abroad. And yet the vast majority of American students are a target for the radical element, which would find it their opportunity to mobilize these students if these students do not have constructive alternatives and vehicles in which, like many other Americans, to express dissent. And so I decry the use of violence, whether it's at home or abroad. But by the same token, we cannot enshrine silence as a patriotic virtue as we have, but let people speak out and have them speak out in constructive ways.
Do you have any question in your mind as to whether these deaths were necessary and what happened yesterday?
I don't think that deaths of this kind are necessary if there are properly trained troops and police, law enforcement officers. I can't believe that you shoot down 4 students who are demonstrating. And we have proven where there is well-equipped and there are well-trained officers and troops that they can handle situations of this kind. I can't pass judgment on it without knowing all the facts, but I just can't conceive that it was necessary to kill four students who were there on that campus demonstrating.
At the same time, you do indicate that as soon as students start doing such things as throwing rocks, they've gone too far.
We have to maintain the tranquility of the campus or the community in order to guarantee the rights and freedoms of anyone. But by the same token, there is a professional way of handling violence, and I don't think you have deaths when you handle it in that way. We can't condone violence on the part of students, and the campus is not a sanctuary from which they are not obligated to obey the law of the larger community. But we have to understand that these students do feel deeply. This war is tearing our country apart, and not only students, but others as well.
Thank you very much, Senator Mark Hatfield of Oregon.
Republican Senator Mark Hatfield of Oregon was critical of the Nixon policy in Vietnam and Cambodia. For another viewpoint now, we've asked Senator Robert P. Griffin of Michigan, the Republican whip in the Senate, to discuss the same issue. And Senator Griffin is in our Washington studio with Today Washington editor Bill Monroe. Gentlemen.
Senator Griffin, you were at the briefing the president held between approximately 5 and 7 p.m. last night for certain congressional leaders and the foreign relations committees. What did the president say that was new about the situation?
Well, Phil, he answered questions for an hour and a half and answered some of the toughest and most penetrating questions that could possibly have been thrown at him. He made it clear that unlike the reference that Hugh Downs made, that we're intervening in Cambodia or that we're invading Cambodia, as some people, the critics, put it, that we have no intention to invade Cambodia or to get involved in the Cambodian request for massive military assistance, that the only thing we're doing here is trying to save American lives, which are at stake as a result of the occupation over a five-year period by the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong of sanctuaries just over the border in Cambodia, which are a threat to our troops in South Vietnam. Now then, while it may be technically Cambodian territory, the Cambodians have no control over it. The communists occupy and control that territory. He made it clear that this is a very limited operation, limited in terms of geography. We don't intend to go in any more than 19 miles at the most. It's limited in terms of its objective. That is to clean out supplies and communications and headquarters bases and so forth to make it impossible for the enemy to continue to use those sanctuaries. And then it's limited in terms of time, that we're going to be out of there in a matter of 6 or 7 weeks. And this will enable the president to continue with his Vietnamization program and to bring our troops home on schedule, which is very, very important. And I think most Americans certainly support the idea of continuing to bring our troops home.
Senator Griffin, in his original speech on sending U.S. troops into Cambodia, the president did not mention the factor of the Cambodian government being hard-pressed by the communists. But didn't he mention last night, and didn't Secretary Laird mention a couple of days ago, that the plight of the Cambodian government, the Lan Nol government, was a factor in the sense that our sending troops in at this time would relieve the pressure on the Cambodian government?
I don't think there's any question about it that a side effect or an indirect benefit will be that it will relieve the pressure on that the communists are directing at the capital of Cambodia, and also relieve the pressure against their taking over Sihanoukville. All of a sudden, the communists find themselves faced with an enemy on both sides, and their supplies are being taken away, and their weapons and their ammunition and thousands of rockets and mortars and so forth, all of which, incidentally, would have been killing Americans in South Vietnam if we hadn't gone in there and gotten them. So it is a side effect. It buys time. It will undoubtedly give us a period of 10 to 12 months that the South Vietnamese Army can continue to train and get better and better able to handle its own situation in South Vietnam. And it will also give the Cambodian Army some time to get ready and to train, which I think is very good.
When we pull out in 6 or 8 weeks, can't the communists apply the pressure again to the Cambodian government?
Well, you see, it's a race against the rain. They have the monsoon seasons over there. And one of the reasons that they can't do that is that they're going to be inundated and flooded, and it will be until November before they can really mount any kind of an offensive after that.
Senator, the president apparently, according to one report, decided to send U.S. troops into Cambodia against the advice of his Secretary of State, against the advice of his Secretary of Defense, and without bothering to consult Congress. Isn't that an unfortunate condition under which to send U.S. troops across a foreign border?
Well, I want to make it clear that the president hasn't sent American troops to Cambodia in response to the request of the Cambodian government for American military assistance. I said the same thing, that the administration was not giving consideration to that, and they are not doing that. The only thing that's involved here is the a military decision by the commander-in-chief of our armed forces to protect American lives in Vietnam. And he's doing that. Incidentally, a letter has gone to the United Nations from our delegate, Ambassador Yost, explaining that this is in accord with collective self-defense measures that are allowed under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. So I think that instead of expanding or enlarging the war, as the critics are quick to charge, President Nixon here has taken a very limited action, which actually permits us to confine and limit the war to our participation and our direct concern with the situation in Vietnam, allowing us to, on an orderly basis, to get our troops out, but not on a surrender or a Dunkirk basis, on a basis that the South Vietnamese will at least have a chance to have a government of their own choice when we leave.
Well, his action does put thousands of U.S. troops into Cambodia for the first time. Do you approve of that being done without any consultation with Congress?
I think in this situation, where it's a very limited military incursion across the border into areas that are not occupied or controlled by Cambodia, but are occupied and have been controlled by the communists for 5 years, and which are threatening our Vietnamization program, an operation that had to be done within a limited period of time and had to be done in very high secrecy, that I think this was the kind of a decision that the commander-in-chief could make.
You mean he couldn't consult with Congress without leaks?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. I'll be frank to say, I wish the president had consulted more with Congress. I always wish he would. I'm a senator, and I would always like to have more consultation. But I can't understand some of the reasons and some of the circumstances for the decision in this particular situation.
Now, Senator Hatfield indicated that he and some of his brethren were somewhat offended by the president's lack of consultation with Congress, and the senator feels the Congress ought to have some way of placing guidelines on the president in Vietnam and Cambodia, and he has a resolution. There are other resolutions that would have similar effects, asking that the Congress either declare war or somehow or other try to put an end to the military operations in Southeast Asia by a program of cutting down on spending until we're forced out. Is there any possibility that this could have any effect?
You know, Bill, it occurs to me that we ought to keep in mind that President Nixon didn't initiate this war. He inherited a war. We haven't been sending more troops over since he came into office. We've been bringing them home on a regular basis. If we should lose this war in Vietnam, and I don't think we will, it won't be because of what the communists are doing to us in Southeast Asia. It's going to be because we'll lose it here in the United States, where we don't support the president in a situation where he's doing the right thing and he's bringing our troops home. And this would be very unfortunate. Now, we don't want to declare war. If we declared war, we'd immediately put the Soviet Union on the spot. They have treaty commitments. It would say to the world that we're going to impose a military defeat on North Vietnam. We're not really trying to do that. All we're trying to do is make sure that North Vietnam doesn't take over South Vietnam.
Did the president touch on these things in the briefing?
Yes, he did. He did, very definitely. And I hope and pray that the American people in a situation like this are going to disappoint the communist enemy, who are hoping that they're going to win this war in the United States. And they're going to disappoint them and support our troops and our president in South Vietnam so that he can just proceed with an orderly withdrawal of our troops, which is what he wants to do.
Senator Griffin, what is your feeling about the events at Kent State where 4 students were killed?
Well, I'm very saddened and shocked and like all Americans, and I think it's a tragic situation. I feel very sorry for the families of those four students. I think that blame could be directed perhaps at those who issued live ammunition to the National Guardsmen, perhaps. Now, many are blaming the 18 and 19-year-old National Guardsmen who were untrained and caught them, were found in a situation where they were being pelted with rocks and their tear gas had run out and they thought their lives were in danger. I don't think the blame should be directed there. I think the blame should be directed at the hardcore revolutionaries who are on our campuses fomenting violence and trying their best to overthrow the government of the United States. And I would also direct the blame at the administrators in colleges and universities who don't expel those students who are criminally involved in violence and criminal acts.
Thank you very much, Senator Robert P. Griffin of Michigan, the Republican whip in the Senate.
Opposition to the Nixon administration's policy in Southeast Asian war has been expressed in many sectors of the nation. The most articulate protests have come from the academic community, from administrators, teachers, and students. We have two guests now who are at the center of this opposition. Dr. James M. Hester, who is the president of New York University and the man who drafted a letter of protest to President Nixon that was originally signed by the heads of 37 colleges and universities, and many other college leaders have since added their signatures. And Charles Palmer, who's president of the National Student Organization, the traditional student group that represents student governments at more than 400 schools. 2 days ago, the NSA joined with the former Vietnam Moratorium Committee to call for a nationwide campus strike to protest the war, and the call was heeded at many campuses around the country. We want to discuss the issues involved now with our two guests. Republican Senator Robert Griffin of Michigan said that the underlying blame for tragedies like that at Kent State lies with college administrators, that things would not go this far if what he called the hardcore revolutionaries were expelled from school. What is your reaction, Dr. Hester, to that?
Well, that's an impossible idea. The only people that can be expelled from school are people who are apprehended in specific acts that have been prohibited by rules at the school, who are found by a panel, usually of faculty and students, to be guilty and then expelled.
Does that happen? I think a lot of people think that that never happens.
Well, it does happen. Numerous students have been expelled in the last few years after hearings at colleges and universities across the country. But there are many, many others who have been engaged in various kinds of protests, some of them violent, in which it's been impossible to identify them, to charge them, to bring them before these hearings. So the idea that you can automatically expel hardcore radicals is just an impossible one.
Now you have, I understand, canceled classes at New York University. For how long?
Well, we've suspended formal classes today and tomorrow in order to give students and faculty opportunities to discuss their views about the present situation, and to see what they can do to try to express themselves. We're having a meeting of our University Senate tomorrow to decide what we will do thereafter.
Mr. Palmer, how many campuses have followed the National Student Association's call for a strike?
Well, this morning we went over 300. Campuses all across the country have responded, campuses in places that no one would have ever thought possible.
I see. Now, is this strike call for an indefinite period, or is it capped?
There's been no limit set on the strike, and many of the campuses where strikes have been called, they've been called for 3 days with a period of reassessment to be gone through at the end of that time, or for 2 days. And at several campuses, for instance, Princeton and some of the other schools,
yes.
It's just been an open-ended strike.
Let me ask both of you whether added impetus has been given to this strike action by the Kent State massacre.
Yes, that has had a tremendous effect. You must understand that many, many students are very confused. They feel deeply that something is going on over which they have no influence whatsoever. They're trying to find ways to make this deep feeling known. This feeling is shared and sympathized with by many faculty members, and an incident like the tragedy at Kent State has simply agitated the situation even more.
Now, in your letter to the president, you asked him to meet with the college presidents who are signatory. Has he replied that he would do so?
We have had no definite response. We're very hopeful that he will see us. We want him to understand how deeply many of our students and faculty feel. These are not unpatriotic people. These are deeply concerned people who want to be sure that the president understands how strong their emotions are, and I hope very much that we will have this opportunity.
Mr. Palmer, the student newspaper at Yale broke with many of the other college papers by coming out against a campus strike. They said it would be counterproductive and that that might only add fuel to the administration's attempts to rally public support against demonstrations. How do you deal with that point of view?
I don't think so. I think given the situation, this is probably one of the best responses that could have happened. To not have responded to the invasion of Cambodia would have been to add credibility to the administration's action. And yet most of us felt that we had to respond in a way that was nonviolent, in a way that where the action itself couldn't be used as something to cloud the issue. The issue is the expanding war in Southeast Asia, and that's the issue that's concerning students across all the campuses, I think, of this country, and also, I think, people throughout the society as a whole.
Would there have been a way to make that statement, though, without the strike? I'm thinking of President Brewster of Yale, who said he's sympathetic with he shares the students' feelings about the war, but he said, I hope we're smart enough to devise a better way to demonstrate our distress than to curtail education.
This is not a strike against the university. It's a strike by the university against the president and his administration's actions in Cambodia. And the reason that I think that that's an important kind of action is because it says very symbolically, look, you know, we've done a lot of talking about how we're opposed to the war in Southeast Asia. At this point, and with the kind of urgency that presents itself in this situation, education really becomes irrelevant. If we're talking about a free society in which the Congress, which is supposed to represent the people, is unable to exercise its unwilling to exercise its constitutional responsibility, I think that that kind of sense of urgency, the kind of what I think is a constitutional crisis that we're in right now, makes it essential that we say, not only symbolically but in acts, that we've got to stop. I mean, and that's been a feeling that's been widespread, not just in areas of traditional support for opposition to the war, but for instance, the Department of Electrical Engineering at the University of California, I was told last night, voted to call off classes, and that's got to be an historic first for the University of California.
Will this represent a personal sacrifice on your part in any way? You have plans in the field of law. Now, if this strike goes on indefinitely, will that affect your equipping yourself with the techniques of practicing law?
Well, I wouldn't be going to law school until next year anyway. My sense now is that the strike all over the country is going to be reassessed. We are going to be in contact now with most of our constituent student governments, assessing what is the best tactic to continue with after Friday. My sense is that unless something is done by the Congress to exercise its constitutional responsibility, and or unless the president changes his policy, going to law school starts to become a little irrelevant in this country.
And we're talking about the student strike called for by the NSA and Dr. Hester's letter to President Nixon, which signed originally by 37 college and university presidents and then later by many more, and in which you called to ask the president to meet with the college presidents. And we said earlier that there had not been a response yet, but there is a development that there may not be. Is that?
I don't know. I'm hopeful that he will see fit to see us. I think it would be very helpful.
I still think it might.
I think the one of the things that the students need very much is the assurance that the president is responsive to what they're thinking, and I think it would be very useful if he would see us and give us that opportunity to express what we feel and to express his views.
I just had a question because certainly students have considered asking to meet with the president. What sort of thing do you think is going to come out of that?
I have no idea, but I do believe that it would be extremely helpful because in the present circumstance we have a very confusing situation developing where there are all sorts of protests going on. The strikes themselves are taking a variety of forms throughout the country. I think anything that we can do to establish rapport between the academic community and Washington would be useful.
Let me ask this again of both of you. I'll start with you, Mr. Palmer. What can be done, or what are you maybe already doing, to separate in the public mind and perhaps to a certain extent in actuality what are referred to as hardcore revolutionaries, or the people who appear to damage their environment, or who, you know, the rock throwers and so forth, from the main body of the dissent, so that it is not equated by the opposition as all being unwarrantedly disruptive?
Well, I think one of the things that's going on local levels all around the country is the students themselves are doing a certain amount of self-policing. And the other thing that's going on is I think that there are large enough that the great breadth and depth of the major demonstrations and the fact, the tremendous discipline that students have shown nationwide, when you look at how many schools, 300 now, are out on strike, and how relatively little violence that there has been, I think they're doing a good job of policing themselves. I don't think, you know, we don't want to get into an argument over tactics, because the argument we really have is with the President of the United States and his invasion of Cambodia.
At the same time, from the standpoint of pure expediency, tactics would be important, since public sympathy tends to flee.
Certainly.
From...
And that's why in every statement which we've issued, in the call for the strike, we stress the fact that the only people that could benefit from random kinds of violence at this point are the people who are supporters of this expansion of the South Asian war.
What effects do you think, Dr. Hester, if the classes resume at NYU and other places, but the student strike goes on, will this be the basis of contention between the...
Well, it's almost an impossible hypothetical question at this point. In most universities, classes are almost over anyway, so that one of the reasons you find universities deciding not to hold classes any longer is that there at most maybe a week left for classes, and the mood that has possessed the campuses is such that they don't think classes could be held successfully. Whether we have another week of classes next week, whether we can resume classes, will be determined really by our Senate tomorrow.
The New York Daily News headline said that President Nixon's the exit from Cambodia would take place by June 30th. Does that statement now, having put a time limit on the adventure.
Well, we've had time limits put on other kinds of ventures. But I think even more than that, the fact that he invaded Cambodia, the fact that he did that without consulting with the Congress, the fact that this country was put together by a group of people who feared the growth of a powerful executive, and one of the strongest checks that they put into their system was that the Congress shall declare war, and yet we find ourselves invading neutral countries without the Congress even being consulted. We find ourselves escalating the bombing without the President's own leader in the Congress not even being aware 2 or 3 hours beforehand that was going to occur.
So even if this works, the students feel that something's got to be done to prevent
the future. The question is more than just pulling out of Cambodia. The question is the entire war.
Barbara?
I'd like to ask you about a statement made in a column in today's Daily News. Hugh just mentioned a headline in it. I'm quoting. It says, "Nevertheless, in the present instance of campus unrest, Nixon does not, according to the White House spokesman, plan to meet with the petitioning college and university presidents. This group, true enough, fails to represent the broad spectrum of alleged seats of learning, but rather is weighted with heads of Eastern Ivy-type colleges, with a few exceptions like Theodore Hesburgh of Notre Dame." This is a column entitled "Capital Stuff" by Ted Lewis. Now, this is the point of view of some people, that it is an Eastern establishment.
The message that we sent was put together on Monday. The people who signed it were those that we could reach by telephone in a short period of time, so that that's why the list of names is characterized by people in the East predominantly.
You feel it is a much broader spectrum than one may presume from
I would think so,
this
yes.
kind of a statement.
It's definitely fine. That when you look at the schools that are now on strike, the University of Tennessee, the University of Texas, the University of Alabama, the University of San Diego State College in California, you're talking about schools that are really peopled by the sons and daughters of middle America.
In the past, the President has said, in talking about student protests, that he will not be influenced by demonstrations. Obviously, you're hopeful that this will have a different effect.
Well, we're not, I mean, maybe what we're pointed, we're hoping not only the President will respond, but one of the things that we're demanding is that the Congress, and the Senate in particular, exercises constitutional responsibility. I really find it difficult to understand if this is all the power that Congress has in this really key issue, what's the value of being a senator if you're not informed, if you're not only not informed, but that when you're consulted and you say no, it goes on anyway.
There's a whiff of suspicion that may lick some minds in these days, that whoever controls the hardware might conceivably be able to override any considerations the Congress comes up with. Is that an alarming thing to students?
That's obviously an alarming thing, not only to students, but I think to the people in this country as a whole. It's an alarming thing, obviously, for the group of university presidents who issued this statement. I think that you can't help, students can't help but become more cynical. People who ask students to go into legislative campaigns, for instance, to seek an end to the war, are certainly losing credibility by the fact that the Congress has indicated that it will not or cannot exercise any control in this area.
We are out of time. I want to thank Dr. James Hester, president of New York University, and Charles Palmer, who's president of the National Student Association.